From Radio Catskill Studios in Liberty, New York, this is the local edition. I'm Jason Dole. Thank you so much for being here with me tonight. Well, coming up, there's yet another bump in the rocky road that New York's young cannabis industry has been on since legalization in the state. And it's yet another looming deadline for cannabis cultivators. Also, the New York State Comptroller's Office has released a report with numbers that back up what many of us were already thinking. Finding housing is tough in the state, and it's even tougher for the youngest generations who are looking to buy a home. Plus, a Catskills eatery has one of the top 23 dishes in the entire United States. Those stories and more from the Times Union when Philip Pantuso joins us in just a moment. But first, we have some healthcare news. Because according to health nonprofit data, more than half of New York State's 50 rural hospitals are at risk of closure. In light of that, the Local Input in Community Healthcare Act, also called the LICH Act, L-I-C-H, aims to prevent those closures from happening. The state bill, which passed the legislature in June, proposes more community input and stricter requirements of hospitals that are looking to close. This past week, the bill was delivered to Governor Hochul to be signed or vetoed. For more on the bill, Radio Catskills, Kimberly Izar spoke with Lois Utley, healthcare advocate with the Community Voices for Health System Accountability Coalition.
The state legislature passed the LICH Act for the second year in a row this year, and it would require ample advance notice to the public if a hospital wants to close. It would also require much greater engagement of the community that would be affected by a closure, and it would strengthen the state review process to better protect patients.
And tell me a little bit more about what you're hearing from both hospitals and residents about why hospitals are at risk of closure.
Unfortunately, federal cuts to healthcare funding are looming, and they are threatening the financial viability, frankly, of many New York hospitals. Rural hospitals, such as those in the Catskills, and urban safety net hospitals are considered to be especially at risk. So that's why we need much stronger state oversight and community engagement to protect patients' access to care when their hospitals are proposing to downsize or even close entirely.
Yeah, I know you've been working with some local residents here in Sullivan County and the Catskills, notably the Senior Legislative Action Committee. And I was just looking at a list of hospitals at risk, and Garnet Health Medical Center here in the Catskills and Harris was on that list due to financial issues.
That's not surprising. Many, many rural hospitals all across the country and also here in New York are already financially at risk. And once the provisions of the so-called Big Beautiful Bill, which I would call the Big Ugly Bill, go into effect, hospitals are going to be losing a lot of money. The bill cuts $900 billion from Medicaid funding over the course of maybe 10 years. It also eliminates the enhanced subsidies that people have been getting for health insurance plans that they purchase through the Affordable Care Act plans like the New York Exchange. The result of all this is going to be that more people will be showing up at hospitals with no insurance or really inadequate insurance. And that will mean that hospitals will be, you know, having to care for people without proper reimbursement. Their costs for charity care and their so-called bad debt costs will be going up and up.
Lois, can you tell me a little bit more about if the LICH Act is signed into law, how would it work exactly? If I'm a hospital executive and there is a ward that we're interested in closing, how would it exactly work if the LICH Act is in place?
Sure. Let me start by comparing it to the existing state process for review of hospital closures or downsizings, and then what Governor Hochul's Department of Health issued last week, which was a modestly improved version of those hospital closure guidelines. Unfortunately, what the department released just a week ago felt really far short of what's needed to protect New Yorkers. It still requires only 90 days advance notice of the planned closure to the Department of Health, not the community, the Department of Health. That is just not enough time to develop plans for where patients would go if their hospital closed. By contrast, the Litch Act would require 270 days advance notice and prompt notification of the community. That's the kind of time that is needed to really develop robust plans to mitigate the likely impact of a hospital closure.
Right.
There's so much that needs to be taken into account. Like, if people have to go 40 miles away to another hospital, how are they going to get there? The new Department of Health guidance makes some modest improvements to the pre-existing requirement for a public hearing. So, for example, it does require 10 days advance notice to the public, which is better than none. But the public hearing would still be run by the very same hospital officials that are proposing to close the hospital, instead of by the Department of Health, as the Litch bill would require. There's a couple more differences. The proposed closure of an entire hospital is still carried out through a simple notice to the department and a review by Department of Health officials behind closed doors. That is far from the level of, frankly, transparency that Governor Hochul had promised for state operations when she became governor. By contrast, the Litch bill would require that hospitals seeking to close, also to downsize, like close the maternity service, for example, they would have to submit what's called a full review certificate of need application, or CON application, to the state. And that would trigger two important requirements. There would have to be an independent assessment of how medically vulnerable local residents would be affected and what steps should be taken to mitigate that impact. And second, the proposed closure would have to undergo public review by experts serving on the State Public Health and Health Planning Council, and at a meeting where affected patients could testify.
Lois, I know that there have been some very timely updates about the Litch Act, even just in the last few days. Governor Hochul called up the bill for consideration. Can you tell me a little bit more about what exactly that means and what the timeline is from now until we hear from the governor?
The way the legislative process works is the legislature passes bills, and the governor then calls them up when she's ready to act on them. She did call up the Litch Act on, or this past Monday. Anyway, she has until midnight on December 19th to act on it. So we are very concerned that she's going to once again veto the Litch Act and say, well, look, I just had my Department of Health update its hospital closure procedures. But as I've mentioned, we don't think those closure procedures are anywhere near what's needed to really protect New Yorkers who could lose their hospitals. So we're encouraging concerned New Yorkers to call the governor's office at 518-474-8390 and tell her that we need her to better protect New York's patients.
Thank you, Kimberly. For even more in-depth reporting for our area in terms of healthcare, check out Health on the Margins, Kimberly Izar's investigative series that explores the Catskills region's fragile healthcare system. Episodes are up now on Radio Catskills podcast page at wjffradio.org. We've got lots of great podcasts there, wjffradio.org. Now let's check in with the Times Union for the latest news in our region. I spoke with Philip Pantuso, Times Union Hudson Valley, earlier this afternoon. Philip, welcome back to the Local Edition.
Always good to be with you.
Let's start with kind of like a long-running story is the fact that, you know, New York legalized cannabis and it was a rocky start and they're still trying to iron out some of those wrinkles, right?
Yeah. The big story here is that the rollout of recreational marijuana in New York has been, a rocky road, certainly. But the latest update is that retailers, not just retailers, basically anybody in the market right now is scrambling to implement a digital seed-to-sale tracking system, which the state is mandating because it will, they say, and there's not much argument about this, sharply reduce or eliminate the proliferation of illegal cannabis that has plagued the industry really since it launched. There's a whole sort of like black market and gray market of people buying marijuana in bulk outside of the state and selling it in retail shops in state. There is a looming December 17th deadline by which participators, cultivators, and processors and retailers have to implement this tracking system, but they say that there are a number of complications that are making that basically impossible.
Okay, what are some of those complications?
The main one is that there seems to have been some miscommunication about when exactly this deadline was. The Office of Cannabis Management said that this was communicated with licensees for several months ago, but a number of people in the industry that Brendan Lyons, our Capital Bureau chief, spoke with for this story said that they didn't really know that the exact deadline was coming up until basically this month. But the bigger issue is that the company that was initially awarded the contract by the state for this system, that company is called BioTrack, they were acquired in just August by another company called Metric. And Metric has completely different systems, basically. And that's forcing all of the processors and cultivators and retailers who have been working on implementing this tracing system to essentially have to redo their work because the company that's now going to be running it has different software and different standards and requirements and all this other stuff. And it's just a very complicated system, full stop. The whole point is to be able to track cannabis plants from seed until they are sold. And basically everybody that we spoke with said that this is, it was already a kind of tough industry with a lot of competition, and that they're having to devote a ton of staff to this effort and facing the possibility of fines if they don't get it done in time. And that's going to really impact their sales down at the end of the year.
What are New York State growers, cultivators, processors, what are they saying about all this? What's their reaction?
I mean, they're pushing back against it pretty strongly. Like, they say that the burden that this looming deadline is placing on them is very onerous. The president, actually, of the Cannabis Association of New York, said the members are eager to comply, but the rapidly approaching deadline presents real operational challenges, particularly for small cultivators, processors, and retailers with lean staffs. She predicted that most would lose, thousands of dollars in sales. A Schenectady grower that we talked to said that it's going to increase its upfront cost to implement this system by something like 4,000% on some of the top of quality products. And yeah, they're really criticizing it. And they recognize that while the intent of the system is good, and while, of course, they are aligned with the state in not wanting there to be a flood of cannabis grown outside New York being sold as, New York cannabis, they say that this is just a major operational challenge and they're asking for at minimum a bit of leeway from the state, maybe like a sort of grace period where the deadline is this date, December 17th, but if you need 2 extra weeks or 3 extra weeks, you won't face a fine.
So much.
But the state has not committed to that, so.
I'm sorry, could you say that part right again? Because I started talking.
The state has not committed to that. So, it's a bit of a stalemate right now.
Right. One of the major issues for New York's rollout of legal cannabis has been what's happening outside of the state. You know, how do you structure it so it benefits New York residents, New York growers, New York sellers, and yet there are other players outside of the state elsewhere in the country. And the funny thing is here, they have to turn to an outside company to do this, and even those shakeups impact local New York State growers. And all this is happening, the article notes, at the same time there's a shakeup within the Office of Cannabis Management, which oversees all of this in New York, right?
Yeah. This is happening as this week the governor is calling for the removal of that office's executive director, as well as its deputy general counsel. And, you know, there has been a lot of changeover in the Office of Cannabis Management since it launched. It's hard to even sum up how much it's been. But you're right to point out this irony. There are a lot of big sort of conglomerates and major multinational companies that have gotten into legal cannabis in the last decade or so. And the state wanted to make sure that if and when they legalize marijuana, that the small farmers who comprise, you know, a huge part of the agricultural industry here in New York were able to participate in it. But what's ended up happening basically is it's just been a huge bureaucratic mess. And they've, in a lot of cases, this is just my opinion, I think, but it's pretty incontestable that they've kind of made the perfect the enemy of the good. And they have, I think, over complicated the system, such that it's just been really, really difficult to actually get it going. And that continues to, you know, to be an issue, you know,
right.
Several years into it.
And that's not just your opinion too, because that jibes with feedback that we hear from, you know, New Yorkers involved in this industry. You know, the criticism that they have of this falls under what you just described there. So absolutely. It's a local edition. I'm Jason Dolan. We're talking to Philip Pantuso, Times Union Hudson Valley. We've got more stories to come, including a report from New York State's comptroller about how difficult New York's housing market is. Stay with us.
You're listening to The Local Edition, winner of Excellence in Broadcasting Awards from the New York State Broadcasters Association. Radio Catskill. Listen local.
Marjorie Taylor Greene simply said Trump's White House is not doing what they said they were going to do. And that sentiment is beginning to gain a lot of traction on the right. I don't think that his hardcore base has deserted him, but the bottom has really fallen out of his support amongst independents and black males and Latino males.
I'm Natalie Kitroev. That's Today on the Daily from the New York Times.
I'm Jason Tuga, host of The Mixtape. I play classics you love, deep cuts, and brand new music. Friday nights at 7, only on Radio Catskill.
It's the local edition. I'm Jason Dole. We're talking with Philip Pantuso, Times Union, Hudson Valley. Let's stay with some state news now and talk about another report from the state comptroller's office, and this one specifically about housing and housing in New York State, which is already a big issue, specifically how it's affecting the youngest generations that are looking at getting homes.
Yeah, I'm. This is not going to shock anyone, particularly the Gen Z and millennials among us. I'm an older millennial, so this hits home for me. But this report puts some numbers to something that I think everybody knows, which is that those generations are really being hammered economically by rising cost of living, shrinking job opportunities, and ballooning debt. That's the findings of a new report from the state comptroller's office, which painted a pretty stark picture of the financial situation facing two generations of younger New Yorkers. So that's, you know, that's millennials and Gen Z. So basically people born from 1980 to, I don't exactly know the Gen Z cutoff. It's, I think it's like 2010 or so.
Right.
And, you know, that obviously sucks for them, for us, but it also kind of zoomed out to take a larger look about what that would mean for growth in New York State. And, you know, it said that would be bad. basically, it said that the the situation facing these two generations could really imperil the state's economic future at a time when we're seeing, you know, declines in population and declines in economic growth, at least relative to what we'd seen in previous decades year over year in New York State.
We've been talking about the housing issue right along here. I mean, last year, it was Governor Hochul's flagship issue that she was pushing on. It was like, here's what we should do about housing. And this year, for this year's budget, the governor didn't really say much about housing. But everybody knows this issue is still there. And this is just like, it's tough. And the comptroller is saying it's going to only get tougher unless we do something.
Yeah. I mean, I think, to your point about the governor, I just think she was so bruised by the fight 2 years ago that she didn't want it this year. But I can put some numbers to what you're talking about here. So this study looked at New Yorkers aged roughly 18 to 34, which that represents, that's 4.6 million New Yorkers, nearly a quarter of the state's population. That age group has actually declined by about 2% in the state over the last decade, just raw totals, even as the national population of young adults has grown. And that kind of gets at one of the takeaways of this is that, you know, there are a lot of New Yorkers, particularly young New Yorkers who will have a little more flexibility, are going to continue to leave the state if they, you know, see better job opportunities and more affordable housing elsewhere. The report found, for example, that rents statewide, and of course a disproportionate number of young people rent, have jumped 33% since 2013. And of course, in some areas, including the Hudson Valley and the Catskills, it's been much higher than that. More than a third of renters in this age group are cost burden, which means they pay 30% at least of their income on rent and utilities. And more than 13% are spending at least half of their income on housing. Another number that's really stood out to me on the housing front is that homeownership has really plunged. So just 23% of New Yorkers aged 26 to 34 own a home. That's down nearly 10% over the past decade. And almost the same number of people, the same percentage, 22% of New Yorkers in that same age bracket, 26 to 34, now live with their parents as a result directly of increased home prices and rental costs. So not because they have to take care of their parents or anything. And combined with food and transportation, well, housing, food, and transportation account for more than two-thirds of young adults' expenses. This is happening as debt is up among young people more than 60% over the past couple of years. Young adults hold nearly 30% of all U.S. household debt.
As you said right at the beginning, comptroller's kind of just reinforcing and giving numbers to and making a report about things that we kind of already felt were going on.
Yeah. I mean, this is something we've talked about on a kind of like, you know, story by story, daily news type of basis. You know, anytime I'm on here talking about housing or healthcare costs or et cetera, you know, this is just the reason those things matter is because of the big picture that this report provides.
We're talking to Philip Pantuso, Times Union Hudson Valley, and these stories are up at timesunion.com. And I think we got a couple stories from out Greene County way because the county seat in Greene County, which is Catskill, I actually read this earlier in the Times Union, they're going to get a big downtown revitalization.
Yeah, so this was announced earlier this year. The Downtown Revitalization Initiative is a major and heavily hotly contested award that the state gives out every year to one community in each of the 10 sort of economic regions of the state. And it's basically a $10 million award package for a whole suite of projects, and you have to sort of apply with what you like would use this money for. And then if you are chosen as the winner for your region, then you have to really drill down and come up with a comprehensive plan and a timeline and everything. That process involves a lot of public meetings and feedback. It's a big, major process, and a lot of people want a piece, of course. And Cantscale just, as I mentioned, they were awarded the Downtown Revitalization Grant earlier this year, and they submitted their final 19 projects for consideration, which will now get approved by the state sometime early next year. And you know, I won't go through all 19 of them. They comprise a range of essentially everything you'd imagine, from building more affordable housing to investing in cultural and creative projects in Catskill to improving creek access along the Catskill Creek in the village, and investing in like mental health and some renovations to the library. There's a whole, we basically cover all of them sort of broken out by sections in our article, but it's big, big, big news for the village of Catskill. And now we just basically are waiting for the State Department of State to give the final thumbs up or thumbs down to this.
Well, and I just want to let the listener know that Greene County, which, you know, like Ulster County, is both in the Catskills and on the Hudson. And as far as these economic regions go, it's part of the Capital District region. A little more to the south, near Sullivan, Ulster, Orange, we're part of the Mid-Hudson region. And the economic development recipient for the Mid-Hudson region that was announced earlier this year was Poughkeepsie, just in case anybody was curious. But I do remember talking to you about some of this earlier in the year, so it's great to see these projects rolling along. Let's stay in Greene County, and let's stay like right in Catskill, because Maria Silva puts out, it seems like it's a roundup of like eateries, and she mentions Lumi's Luncheonette is going to be opening up in January in Catskill. And then also in Greene County, there's a dish that's been listed among the nation's top dishes. Is that right?
That's right. Yeah. So I think it was earlier this week, the New York Times, they're kind of rolling out all their end of year food content this week and last. And they did a roundup of the 23 best dishes that their food critics ate across the U.S. in 2025. And of course, I'm scrolling through this to, you know, just look on with in hunger and awe at some of the things that are being served up across the country, and notice that the Catskills' own Julia's Local made the cut, specifically a gravlax dish, which is a sort of Scandinavian juniper cured salmon appetizer. So this place, Julia's Local, it's I've actually never been there, but we did a review of it a year or so ago. It seems like a real trip. It is run by a Norwegian chef who and his wife. The wife owns the restaurant and runs the farm. I think they grow most of what they serve. They also catch most of what they serve. And then they just make everything sort of there from scratch on site. And it's apparently like a really kind of like laid back type of vibe with odd hours, but really sort of creative presentations. And we've got a photo of this dish. As I mentioned, it's a juniper cured salmon that's served with a house-made Danish rye bread and a mild mustard sauce. And apparently it was one of the 23 best dishes in the United States this year.
Yeah, they played it very well. The salmon's kind of curled up in a nice little rosette there. And again, this is Julia's Local, and they are in Round Top, which is a hamlet in the Catskills, the northern edge of the Catskills, just below Caro, New York, if anybody's curious. So, you know, big ups to Julia's Local putting the Catskills on the map nationally in terms of great dishes. We've been talking to Philip Pantuso, Times Union. Philip, thank you so much for going over all this news with us.
You got it. Take care.
Well, that's it for the local edition. Thank you so much for being here with me. Patricio Rabaya will be here with you tomorrow. We'll get a report from Spotlight PA about efforts to keep seniors safe in the Commonwealth. That'll be tomorrow at 6 on the local edition. Coming up at 7 tonight, we've got Brad Mann in live on Ramble Tamble. filling in for Andy Carlson. So do stay tuned for that. But first, we've got more news on the way from The Daily. This is Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR.